This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
When in the field, accuracy and precision count. That's why we switch our slug guns to rifle barrels, tune our arrows, and use a fish finder on the water. But why should our drive for control end there? The Tapicu line of meat probes gives an instantaneous look at the temperatures of our prized meals, both internal and the cooking chamber. Tapicu uses sturdy hardware made and assembled here in the U.S., along with their user-friendly, sophisticated software that connects to your smart device. Whether it's a traditional corded probe or the new cordless air probes that give you a wealth of freedom where wires would just get in the way. Adding a Tapicu meat probe can significantly help in getting to that medium rare on venison or waterfowl, ensuring your upland bird stays moist, or even charting your long cooks on a smoker. Visit Tapicu.com or find the link in the show notes and use the code HUNT10, all uppercase, at checkout to save 10%. Adding a probe to your kit can make you one tap away from your cue. Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Nation, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it. This is episode 69, Recipes with Jeff Benda. Nick is joined by North Dakota native and serious wild game cook, Jeff Benda. Jeff grew up with a family that appreciated being in the kitchen, going to authentic restaurants, yet wasn't able to start hunting until becoming an adult. In that time, he has taken his love of quality natural meat and passion for creating in the kitchen and began writing wild game recipes, which have been featured in several publications. So get your notes ready. You're going to need it for this episode of Huntivore. Well, hey, folks, welcome. Got another evening here for you here in Michigan. We're getting our first bout of rain here in March. It got real dry. We got the fire ban that was going on, and so there's a lot of leaves that are needing to get burned down, and hopefully we'll be able to do that this weekend now. But anyway, what I've got tonight is a total surprise. Out of the blue, I get a listener who jumps in, throws over a recipe that I think that is just super awesome. So, of course, I was like, no, we need to have this guy on. I am talking with Jeff Benda from North Dakota. He is a hunter, angler, dad, and makes some amazing wild game recipes and photos to go along with it on his Instagram. I mean, you look at it, and you want to eat the picture. Jeff, thank you so much for just stopping by so suddenly just this week.
No, yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I love your podcast.
So over there in North Dakota, what is the outdoorsman working on right now? Like this spring season, like everything seems to be like we're getting ready for something to happen. I mean, there's always shed hunting that's going on here in the springtime, but at the same time, like what's the next season that you're looking forward to?
I I'm just about to do my first spring turkey hunt. That's in a couple weeks. So I'm actually going out to some public land, a very large swath of public land that we have 45 minutes from Fargo that most people don't even realize is there, the Cheyenne National Grasslands. And I'm going to go camp over the weekend and see if I can call in a turkey. So I've never done it before. This is new to me.
Gotcha. So, your first turkey hunt or just first turkey hunt in that specific area?
First spring turkey hunt, like actually calling them in, you know, versus driving around with a shotgun on your front seat, you know, looking for a turkey on the side of the road. That's fall turkey hunting here in North Dakota. So, so it'll be a little bit different. And then after that, it's fishing with my daughter. She's 5. So we have kind of a little spot here in Fargo, our little secret spot. It's a little drainage ditch. So it's a little safer to take a 5-year-old on.
There you go.
Yeah, we do really well. She catches all the walleye, and we catch carp and catfish and all kinds of good stuff. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is fun to be preparing for stuff. And then, yeah, now it's really exciting that you're going to be going out and actually try to call in a tom. You mentioned it was the grasslands over there in North Dakota. How sparse is there, like scrub trees that are out there? Like I'm envisioning, I don't want to necessarily say like just straight savanna or like straight off grasslands, but is there some scrub vegetation that you're going to be hiding from, or is it going to be one of those like you got to crawl up on these things?
No, there's like the Cheyenne River runs through it. So I mean, there's trees, there's it's surprisingly wooded, you know. I mean, there's a lot of clearings, but it's a really great spot. My I take my wife and daughter out there all the time. We'll pick raspberries, hike around. It's a special place that we have that not a lot of people utilize.
Gotcha. Isn't that amazing how like our public lands, just as we talk a little bit about them, like there's more and more emphasis behind them, but how underused they can be. Like it can be a place that you can just escape to. It can be a place that you can literally just go get lost in and not see another person for miles and miles. And there's that opportunity, but how underused that seems to be.
Yeah. You can camp out there for free. I mean, hunt out there, hike, fish. It's all there, that the public land, and we have tons of it here in North Dakota.
So. Awesome. Yeah. Michigan's got its swaths of it too. So it is one of those commodities that we do love to enjoy to take off onto. So as you're out there, you're like one of your big pursuits for going onto these public lands or even just private lands that you find here and there is you're after wild game. And I'm looking at your handle here on Instagram and you're talking about, you know, this is the ND Wild Cook. So we know like, or Wild Game Cook, this is like, you're out there for a purpose. I mean, I'm sure trophy is what you're going for, just like anybody else. Like you want the big buck, you want that huge gobbler to come walking right up to you. But at the same time, I take it you're a little bit on the opportunistic side. Do I get that vibe from you, Jeff? Are we on the same wavelength there that whatever the opportunity we get, we, you know, we want to put it on the plate first before we put it on the wall?
Yes, but I would say that definitely I put in for doe tags. So I hunt Montana, I put in for doe tags or cow tags. I hunt Wyoming, it's all doe tags, cow tags. So North Dakota, and that's really from a budget standpoint, right? I can get 4 doe antelope tags in North Dakota, or I'm sorry, 4 doe antelope tags in Wyoming. You can get up to 4 for half of what a buck tag is going to cost. And that just brings a lot of meat and gives me more opportunity and just this amazing experience. Now in North Dakota, that's different. Yeah. My first choice, I'm going to put in for a buck. But I'm not, my second choice on there is always going to be a doe. I have one deer on my wall. It's a mule deer from a few years ago. It was my first Western hunt in North Dakota. And it was a back-to-back. It was my first antelope hunt out there. And then another month later, I went out there and shot this mule deer buck. And it hangs on my wall as a reminder that that was the worst tasting animal. Because I spent hours, I shot it like way off the road. My taxidermist actually lived like down the road, like this guy I had hired, like, you know, to do this. So he, like, I had to wait, cause there's no cell phone reception. So I had to like get out of there, find him, bring him back out. It was probably 70 some degrees. It had sat out there forever. We had to drag it. Now I have a cart, but we had to drag it and try not to mess up the hide because I wanted a shoulder mount. So that took forever. Finally got it, hung up, and he took care of his end. You know, by the time I got that meat cooled off, it just wasn't good.
Yeah. That was like a worst case scenario right there.
Yeah. And it's not that it was a butt, you know, and I remember bringing it home, and my wife, you know, she saw it and she was like, you know, it's a mule deer, but she, you know, it's a wide one, but it's a 3x3. And she just said, you know, this is my first wall mounter. And she goes, I don't think that's allowed. I'm pretty sure like minimum, it has to be a 4x4 for, you know, she was just like, do we have to mount this? Right.
You've gone through this whole saga. And that's right. The first thing.
Right. That was her first reaction, but it hangs over. It's my one wall mount, and it's a reminder since that experience. We ate it all. I ate it all. But since then, I take care of the meat right away. That's the number one priority. I when I drive around and I hunt, especially out in Wyoming, I have full coolers of ice ready to go. And that's it, because it's all about the food for me now. Because that's the part I can bring home and share that experience and tell the story with my daughter, with my wife, and with friends. I think that's one of the biggest things that COVID has been so hard, because I just, you know, I want to have that bringing people together and share this wild game that I have. And this year is, you know, you got to drop it off at somebody's doorstep, right?
Yeah. It's been a mess. We've really, as much as I wanted to be able to cook and stuff, like just with our local restaurants, I mean, call it laziness. At the same time, I'm seeing the only way that they're staying alive is takeout. So it's like, we're going down to our barbecue shop here in town, you know, we'll go there once, and then, all right, well, you know, again, it's like now it's on to Wednesday. We had our Monday barbecue. Like, well, let's go to the Chinese restaurant this time, get something from them just to keep everybody lofted. And after a while, you're like, man, I haven't cooked a meal in a week and a half. This is, we got to stop this. You know, I'm seeing my gut start to get bigger a little bit. I'm like, man, too much carbs, too much of the Chinese I'm eating. So,
well, and I think too, what this experience has been this last year, and I think what's really escalated, my need for creativity, like, right. My wife doesn't want just antelope, which, by the way, my wife and daughter will tell you their favorite meat now is antelope. Now, when I was first married to my wife, over 10 years ago, that statement, when she says it out loud, like, she thinks it's so bizarre. That would have never thought to come out of her mouth. I remember when my daughter, my in-laws were watching her. This is, like, I think, about 6 months ago, and they were watching her for the weekend for us. And my mother-in-law went to serve her a pot roast. And my five-year-old said, no, Grandma, I only eat antelope. Right? So, because it was beef. And that's not true. But, I mean, she just...
She was going to make that point right there and then.
Yeah. So... But you got to get creative, right? I mean, she doesn't want just steak and potatoes every night. So I think that's where a lot of these recipes, that's where they come from, you know, like the pot stickers I just made a couple nights ago, the goose pot stickers. We love pot stickers, right? So we got together and we made them, and the girls loved them. So that was good. You know, when you try these recipes, definitely not everything turns out.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we jump into recipe two, and you've told us a great story. I mean, your wall mounter that you, I don't want to say necessarily shame, but it's a good reminder of like, hey, am I out there for the points or am I out there for the hindquarters? You know, it really does put things into perspective.
Right.
When did wild game really become important to you? When did this become something that you're like, man, I'm going to put in and I'm going to get four of these antelope tags? Like, I mean, I could go get a big steer and have that done within the week, but you're going to take the trip out to go get these critters, and it's not even a done deal at that point. Why is that important that you partake in that?
I think now I'm finally at the age where I can live my childhood dream. I did not grow up in a hunting family. I was an Air Force brat. That's how we got to North Dakota. My dad did not hunt. We didn't have anybody in our family who hunted. He rarely took me fishing, but I dreamed about it all the time. Before we ran to church on Sundays, I would be downstairs and they'd be yelling at me to get in the car because I'd be watching Babe Winkleman and you know, those guys in the 80s who were on Sunday mornings, the fishing shows. I was an avid reader. So anything from, you know, My Side of the Mountain to The Sign of the Beaver, even like Island of the Blue Dolphins, right? I mean, like hunting and gathering, and I was just so enthralled with this and dreamed about it and wrote stories. My wife just, we just found a book that I you know, it's a little tiny book that I wrote in elementary school about me going out and hunting. And it's got pictures and everything on there. So I had that basis for that, but we always were big foodies, big cooks, did restaurants. My older sister worked fine dining restaurants on the East Coast. I did the same. I got into the restaurant business, and then later on in the catering business, and food just around the family. We always got together. Every time we get together, we cook and sit and go through cookbooks and pick out something new. So that aspect, the love of cooking has always been there, but it wasn't until 2002 when some guys that I was going to college with invited me to go duck hunting. And so I, you know, and they said, you know, you got to go get hunter safety. So I did that. And so it was the fall of 2002 when I went out and did my first duck hunt and did my first pheasant hunt, and I was hooked. We have not missed a single duck opener together. It's been 18 years now, 18 seasons. And for us, I describe it, it's like, it's a line out of Escanaba in the Moonlight movie, but it's like, for opener for us, it's like Christmas morning, but with guns.
Yes.
You know, you look forward to it all year. But I had never, even with that, I mean, we were shooting ducks and pheasants, but you know, the pheasant was put in my first pheasant was put in a crock pot with cream and mushroom soup because that's what somebody told me to do. And it was not good. you know, but, I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't anything that excited me. But the hunting part, being in outdoors, living that childhood dream of just being out there in the woods and on the prairies, that was what that was about. And it wasn't until, probably, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, after I shot that awful buck, you know, Then I really took it, you know, what can I do now to step up my game? And then also just cooking wild game for my wife. Like, you know, if you're going to go out and spend weeks at a time out in Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, and do all these hunts and bring it home, and cook for your family all year with it. And that's the goal. And that's why I take, you know, this last year it was about 5 deer and 5 antelope. Cause last year was 6 antelope and we ran out. Cause the girls eat that much. I mean, that's what we eat. We don't run, we don't go get beef. But antelope don't have a ton of meat on them. Especially a doe. So it takes that much by the time you are going to share some, and eat it yourself if you're going to eat it all the time. So, but yeah, it's just been, it's combining my two passions of cooking that I've always had and my love of hunting that I've always dreamed about.
That's awesome. Isn't that incredible how like you develop a passion, one of your, like your past and then where you see your future going, like you said, living out your childhood that you've wanted to do and be able to mesh those together into almost a symphony at that point. Like you're able to present something that as you're enjoying that meal, you can talk about, like you said, the 18 seasons that you've been out with your buddies as you're wolfing down on, goose pot stickers. That sounds like an awesome way to use a piece of waterfowl too. Is just little packaged up dumpling that you're able to just pop in. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So you've run the gamut there in the Dakotas area and even out west. We're talking, you were mentioning antelope. You mentioned a cow, I guess referring to elk at that point. You've got some waterfowl under your belt, and some pheasant. I'm gonna ask you to narrow it down. What is the favorite critter to chase?
Antelope, definitely. And now I have chased elk and have never gotten one. And it's a dream of mine to go back and do that. So we'll just have to wait and see how that pans out. But just my trip to Wyoming. It's just an incredible place. Just to have tens of thousands of acres of Bureau of Land Management land to hunt. And I don't know if it's, my dad goes with me on that trip. You know, he'll be 77 this year. He goes with me now the last couple of years. And when he got his first antelope, just the smile on his face, and to share that experience with him, because you know we didn't do that when growing up, and now that he's older. But antelope, the reason I dragged him out there is because I had walked and kicked up so many deer for him, and he was so shaky and hesitant. He missed dozens. I mean, like, not even close. So I'm like, well, let's take you out to Wyoming antelope because I hear they just stand there. Right.
Yeah.
So, and by God, they did for him. So,
wow.
Yeah. So he was able to get, his two, 2 years ago and just, I don't know. It's just a special place that it's probably more special because I've, the first time I went out there was with him. The first year he didn't hunt this. So that's, we've done 3 years now. It's just a special, but I would say that's my favorite.
Gotcha.
Critter to chase big. That's my favorite for big game, but I would say ducks, man. That's waterfowl. That's my passion with my buddies. That's
good deal.
That's it.
Good deal. Yeah. It's a group hunting effort, I think, with the waterfowl. I'm still novice to it, and I've been out a couple times, and I've, I was with a good neighbor of mine. He invited me out to their little party, and we went to a sanctuary here in Michigan, where the sanctuary's on the inside, and then it's like you get there early in the morning, you sign up, and then it's almost like a lottery raffle. They got a little spinner and they pull out the bingo ball, and if your number pops up, then you get to choose on the outside of this sanctuary which little plot you're going to be on. And you're on this, like, I don't know, 100-yard by 100-yard section. And then you look over and there's just like section. And you hope the geese come to your little section. And that
I've heard about this pet type of thing. Yeah,
it is. And going from, as I started out, was just a deer hunter at that point, and then completely switching gears to out here. And I'm kind of like, man, this is a shit show out here. There's so many people. I mean, I can see the dude over there, and everybody's honking and carrying on and having a great time. And so, like, I was like, man, there is a different feel here to waterfowlers. And then just having a chance, you know, through this podcast to be able to talk to people who really have a passion, like you said, with waterfowl, that it's like, man, we love to chase it. And it's because, like you said, you've got a history with those guys, and that's kind of something really special that you guys have started. So I can definitely see how that becomes something that it's like, I look forward to chasing waterfowl every year.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, now here's a question for someone who as I'm looking through all of your recipes here, someone who could probably really answer this question. And I mean, it's more of a personal opinion at this point. But I'm looking at the idea of like flavor versus texture. And I've kind of gone down this journey myself that I enjoy a lot of muscle groups that do a lot of work. I like dark meat on birds, either upland or, my turkeys. I enjoy that dark meat. There's a punch to it. There's a flavor there. And there's something that has to go into making that, I don't want to say digestible. I want to say, like, less toothy, like get it to the point where chewiness is not the only thing you have to do. You're not just chewing to get it down, but you really extract the flavors out of it. Versus a crowd that when they describe something that is so delicious, they're like, oh, you can take all you need is a fork to cut through it. The idea of texture, that piece of backstrap, tenderloin, or whatever you name it, that cut is so soft that you're able to just, you don't even need a knife at that point. You can just cut it with a fork. And so as someone who's played around with now many different critters and tried them many different ways, where do you find yourself leaning? Do you love the tenderness, that Folia Party, that no need for a knife at that point, it just dissolves on the palate? Or do you like the bit of chew that's going to last and you're going to start to get to pick apart the flavors on that? Where do you find yourself leaning?
Now, is this me personally or preparing for my family?
Let's start with you, because I can already imagine what you're going to do with your family. Probably the same thing that I did.
Man, one of my favorite, absolute amazing favorite recipes is, and my daughter's, because she doesn't really understand where it comes from. She knows where it comes from, but anyway, Hank Shaw's deviled kidneys. They're amazing. This is not a very popular piece of meat, the kidneys, but the way the preparation is, it's the kidneys and the mushrooms. And my daughter and I will just devour it. It's so delicious. My wife, because of the texture, it could taste like $1 million. She won't even try that one.
She can't get over it. She can't get around it.
No, now she'll, there's some things that I've done recently, that she surprisingly, she actually really did like it, but that isn't one. Hearts. I served the bacon wrapped hearts with the my buddy Don. I gotta give a shot, like a duck opener. Like, we always serve the same thing. So It's we call them TDTs, tasty duck treats. But we put that, you know, you've seen it, like the pickled jalapeno and the onion.
Yeah.
Some people do cream cheese. We don't do the cream cheese, but it's pickled jalapeno and onion. We put the Tony's seasoning, wrap it in bacon. I serve those tailgating, but with goose hearts. And the next year, I had people coming by and saying, "Hey, do you guys have
those TDTs?
Yeah, is that bacon wrap?" Because they recognize the flags and, you know, the camper that my wife's cousins had. So they're like, "Yeah, people were coming back." That's flavor, right? Because the texture doesn't bother people. I think it's a personal preference. For me, it's all about the flavor.
Good deal. Good deal.
Yeah, the texture just doesn't bother me.
Gotcha.
Too much.
I was gonna try, and you know, I'm glad you jumped into the kidney bit. Due to unforeseen circumstances, my drag out this year of my buck, the boys accompanied me, and long story short, it turned into like a little Colorado trip, like in the mountains. I'd move the deer 20 yards. I'd get a flashlight to the face, and then I'd be like night blinded for a second. I'd have to pick up the one child because he was pouting.
I've heard you talk about this. Yeah. It's a great story.
Oh,
my
goodness.
Great story.
it's one I when I go by that ridge, I have to laugh to myself about it. But anyway, that whole trip, I get the buck going, and then I have the child crying, and I have the other one. He's not doing real well with the flashlight. He's hitting everybody in the eyes with it. And I was going to save the kidneys out of that. But at that point, time was of the essence. And I'm not sure if I said it under my breath or I just thought it, but I just grabbed the whole gut pile and I was just like, "Sorry, Hank." And I had to just heave that off into the woods. I had to cut my losses at that point. but no, the whole idea of the kidneys at that point, when you deviled them, is it like a soak in just like a slight brine, or is it like almost like a full on pickling that you're going on with those?
No, you're not doing the pickling. So you're going to soak it in salt water. I think that helps draw the blood out, and then soak it in milk.
The double treatment.
Yeah, you're doing it not too long. I think people get a little overboard on that. You know, you can just put the salt in, you know, the salt water. I mean, it doesn't have to be days, right?
Yeah.
That's just a personal preference for me. It's like goose pastrami. People do like 7 to 10 days for their brine. That's just too much. I did like 5 days. And I think I just learned that because I was impatient. I wanted that pastrami now. I wanted a Reuben. I just was jonesing for it. And so, so I do mine for 5 days, you know, in the brine. And, that's one of those recipes too. When it comes to Hangshaw, the deviled kidneys, I do not, when you talk about recipes, you know, if you follow them to the letter, you know, when you see something out there, there are certain recipes that you can follow to the letter and they turn out really, really well. And I, at this point, my experience with it, just whether it's restaurants or catering or, you know, things like that, and just eating and just trying so many different recipes, that I just kind of have an eye at, like, I can look at a recipe and say, yeah, that just seems like that just seems like too much salt, or not enough, or I think one onion versus three, right? But for Hangshaw's deviled kidneys, it's perfect. He's doing a lot of Mexican themed things now. That's, you know, he's on that kick right now.
Mm-hmm. He's in that California where he's, I think, from his garden that he's got going on. He's got like 30 different types of chilies there anyway. So it's like an easy transition.
Yeah. And I can't do that. I can't follow those. That's going to be way too spicy my five-year-old, like if I break out the Tonys, she's like, "Dad, not this." Like, I'm like, "Okay, all right, all right, all right." So, you know, not the spicy stuff. So I have to, when I create recipes, I'm trying to do it where, you can make it spicier. But I want a good baseline. I want to create a family friendly baseline where if you feed this to your wife and your kids or your husband, you know, and your kids, that, you know, you can't take chili peppers out. You know, you'll see people post that on Hank's, on his Facebook group, that I post a lot of things in, or, you know, it's sometimes on his podcast, but people will put in, you know, like all the, like the, instead of the three peppers, they'll put like three cans of the peppers.
Oh, right? Yeah. The like, notorious barbacoa. That's, yeah, there's been right? so many people that have done that. Yeah, what you're describing right there.
They keep doing it. They keep doing it. Like look at some like type the recipe in the search and see what other people have done before you attempt this. Yeah. They keep making that. So so on some of those things, I really try to it's flavorful. But especially when it comes to too spicy, I try to not go down that road too much.
Gotcha. Just wanted to take a time out and say thank you to the listeners for tuning in. It really does mean a lot. I would also appreciate that if you haven't already left a rating or review, to go ahead and do that. It all helps folks find us and get on board using and enjoying their wild game more. Feel free to chat with us and ask questions either on Facebook, The Huntivore, or Instagram, @Huntivore. Got a recipe you think is dynamite and want to share? Or have some show topic ideas? Email us at huntivore@gmail.com. For even more hunting and fishing podcasts by real, relatable sportsmen, head over to Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, which happens to be a 2% for conservation company, who give 1% of their earnings and 1% of their time helping out the wildlife and wild places we all love. Now, back to the show.
Yeah.
This is great talk too, as we're talking about recipe, because going through even myself, like I'm trying to go and I'm trying to write down how I made this and trying to basically make an instruction booklet or notes to someone else who said, "Hey, you know what? I really liked what you did there. I want to try that." And so trying to do that for myself. Granted, I'm a presenter. I'm someone who can show what's going on visually. I mean, being an elementary PE teacher, like that's my whole idea is to show like, all right, make the T with our arms. And, you know, you bring your throwing arm up. So now you're bending it so that you can throw that ball. And it's all about these visual cues. And to now put that into writing on how you're going to do this has been... it's been pretty daunting for me personally to try and write that out. And sure. As someone who I'm looking through and has just got so much detail as to amounts, instructions, I want to get an opinion on you. What is a recipe? Is it to the letter you need to follow this? Or is it simply a set of guidelines that you anticipate the reader on altering, flexing, and changing to taste?
It depends on the recipe.
Because I know with like baking is a chemistry. That's that you need science. Like things right. like they the reason that you're supposed to not use the measuring cup is because you have to go by volume, and there's a big switch to have to do that. But things have to be proportioned right, or your biscuits don't turn out, or your cake is not cakey or whatever at that point. But at the same time, like now when we're talking about protein, there's like a a flex that can happen.
Yeah. Well, let's just think on the, I don't know if you just want to jump into the, I could probably give a good example on the Wellington.
Yeah. We can use the Wellington. So, I do want to introduce this in the fact that.
Sure.
Now you've titled it Jackalope Wellington. And before people start getting outraged, being like, holy smokes, they do exist. We found the jackalope before Bigfoot.
That, yeah, I went. Yeah. So the barber who has the jackalope on his wall. Yeah, I went in his freezer in the back and he gave me the backstraps. So.
But what you did was take. Basically, was it jackrabbit or was it cottontail? What do you got out there?
It was cottontail. I mean, yeah, have I gotten jackrabbits? I've actually eaten them, but I put this one, you know, it was just published on the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers website. And
I'll make sure to today, in the show today, notes. Yeah. In the show notes, I'll make sure to put the link from the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers on there.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. But they, I had the antelope backstraps, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, I just got two rabbits, and can I bring them over to you?" So, and he's trapped rabbits for me before, and I'm like, "Yeah, that's great," you know. Because this recipe has been in my head for like a couple years now, like this idea for it, but I didn't know if I could pull it off, but that's because a Wellington, you know. If you're going to do you Google a Wellington, beef Wellington, perfect beef Wellington, like you might get like Gordon Ramsay, you know, Chef Gordon Ramsay's Wellington. And he's using this 3-pound piece of beef. You have a little bit more forgiveness there, right? It's a bigger piece. It's a bigger cut. When you're dealing with, and I think I put that in the description for the recipe. You have a very short amount of time before that antelope becomes medium well, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, if you want it to be that juicy inside, which the one, you know, my wife, you know, it just like melted in your mouth. With something like this on a Wellington, when you have that puff pastry on the outside, you have to get that crisp. But then you don't want to do your, you know, then you don't want to have the meat inside, you know, overdone. And so like a regular beef Wellington, that thing's going to be in the oven for 40 minutes and come out medium rare. But you can't do that with this one, right? This is a 15 minute. You know, and that's just to get the puff pastry done and then to take it out. And, you know, if you look at the photo, it's not rare, you know, you post something on social media that's not bloody rare, you're crucified.
Oh, exactly.
It's happened to me before, right?
If it's really, not, you're getting the haters bleeding, on no, the no blood. God, huh?
Are you kidding me? If it's not bleeding rare, if you have any kind of white in your photo. Oh, they're just crazy. Or you include anything with avocados or beets. Man, you get those haters too.
Oh.
And I'm like, my wife loves avocados.
I will go toe to toe with a beet hater. I used to be one, but that was because they were boiled. My grandmother boiled beets and it turned me off right away. But beets through the oven, roasted, oh man. I'll go toe to toe with anybody on beets.
Yeah. Well, so like in the notes for this particular recipe I put on there, like make sure your oven is all the way up to 425 degrees before you put it in. Right. So because of that time, it, you got to get that pastry golden brown. But then you want that attempt to get a medium rare. Cause then you're going to take it out and still let it rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, something on that, when you're dealing with pastry or things like that. That's why I don't like to bake. My wife is because then I have to follow the recipe too close. My wife likes the recipe there, like all the steps laid out in front of her. She loves baking. She's a great baker, does amazing things with cookies and cakes. I can't do it. I need a little bit more creativity. And I think you can do that with like I told you, my recipes tend to be more mild, right? I think this one is kind of a special one that I've been dreaming about, but most of the other ones, you can kick it up a notch, right?
Yeah.
You can spice it up. And I think for whether it's wild game cooking or any cooking, I think people just need to we but the reason that I love doing this now is because I want to get more people interested in hunting. So if their first experience of hunting is like mine and they go out and shoot a pheasant and they put it in a crock pot with cream of mushroom soup, I don't know if they're going to want to go again, right? And eat it again and share it with their family. Some people are going to love it, but and I don't shame them for it. I mean, I use cream of mushroom soup in certain things. If a guy in college, or a gal in college, they want to go out hunting and then bring something back and make something special for a date night, that's the kind of stuff I want to create a recipe for. Or something for a mom or a dad to use the wild game in their freezer, that they had an adventure getting, but they wanna just not ground it up and make burger, right? They like just to give them another opportunity to share that, and just have something more interesting. That's my goal with all this.
Yeah. Those same
And
shows that
so.
you mentioned, like on Sunday morning, I know there was a one here, Michigan Out of Doors, and I remember watching that one as well as a young kid. And there'd be a segment where they would cook something. And granted, my memory might be harming me at this point, but at the same time, it was like I felt like it was the same off brown pile. Like there was the meat, and then there was just this gravy on top. And
Yeah.
the protein would change, but the same set of ingredients were in there. And not to say they necessarily mask that idea or mask that it was wild game, but I love what you're saying too, is it's like, no, let's not mask this, let's not hide this, let's not just throw it in the cream mushroom soup, but allow this to be something amazing. Allow the critter to not just die in the field, but at the same time not die on the plate as well, but to be celebrated as something incredible, to mimic the life that it did have. And so, yeah, like you're saying, like be able to present this to as a date night where it's worthwhile, or like where you take this extra step of not just using one species in this, but actually mixing two wild games into one idea, and to be able to provide just this wow factor. You know, Wellington's been around since it was created after the war in France, so it's been around forever. And to be able to take Wellington and put a brand new spin of not just one wild game, but two, I think that just, like you said, hits the nail on the head to celebrate these amazing pieces of protein that we have.
Yeah, I think you're not going to see. I think we're at the point in cooking now. You're not going to see something like absolute original, right? You can make a twist on it. Like the what I do the other day. Like my wife, like we had gone out to dinner. This is a couple years ago, but we had those like fried pickles for an appetizer. With that dipping sauce, I'm like, God, these like I just like that was so good. And so I was making Hangshaw's Pickled Northern, and I thought, well, why don't we, you pickled it, now you got this firm pickled, this brine meat. How about we bread it and fry it in the deep fryer, with some fried pickles, and see how it tastes. And we loved it. I think it's just kind of so putting a little twist on a different idea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to come up with different things like that. But I think it's just, and just having fun with it, right? And you can't screw it up too bad. I think one of my favorite things to do, you know, for ideas for people out there, like go to your local library. That's one of my favorite things to do. My daughter's 5. She's learning how to read. She's like reading like crazy now. We go to the library. I take her every single week. And she goes to her section and I help her pick out some books. She usually gets 10 to 15 to 20 books every week. I mean, she's like a reading, like that's what we do at bedtime. She's getting 2 or 3 books. You know, she's naughty. We're taking a book away, right? That's the thing we hold over her head. And then I've already burned through all the cookbooks in our branch. So now like today we went, that's where I go to get some inspiration, right? Just like an idea, maybe something that somebody's done. And then I'm like, okay, how can I use wild game with that? Right? Like if it's lamb, could I use venison or antelope, you know, or goose or, you know, or duck. But like, that would be my idea. Like if anybody has like a cookbook sitting on their shelf, it could be anything. It could be the joy of cooking. It could be, you know, something for Mexican food or Chinese food. Like open that up, or you could go to your local library and get one. Just like open it up and start going through and saying, you know, I got that goose breast in there and I could, you know, in my freezer, or I've got this venison, I could use that. And just like, what's a recipe that you and your family like to eat at a restaurant, or, like just in general, like with beef, and substitute that, like take your favorite thing. Or something that you open it up and like sit down with your significant other and go through the cookbook and go, that looks so good, right? I'll do that with my wife. Like I'll open up the cookbook and I'm like, she'll be walking by and she's like, oh, please make that, right? And I'll try it. But yeah, that'd be my suggestion for people. Just take their wild game and you know, just expand the opportunities that you can do with it.
Gotcha. No, that's awesome insight right there. Not only just taking like the stuff that you normally eat, but like you said, take a venture out and like, I'm trying to think of how many books, like what piece of written literature gets left on the shelf the most. I would say probably number one is service manuals for small engines. Because I never look at it. I'll just take that sucker apart and then lose the bolts and, you know, it'll be fine. But at the same time, next to that, it's like, you know, we get these cookbooks and we might have like 2 or 3 that we've put the Post-it in, but we've never just flipped through and just, you know, let your mind run wild as far as what you're going to go with. You know, darn it. Here we are at the end of the pandemic. I wish I would have thought, you know, I wish I would have talked to you at the beginning of it, because there was tons of downtime where I could have been like, man, going through all these books that I do have access to be able to flip through and just kind of bounce off different ideas. You know, Hank right now is real in deep into his Southwest. Like maybe we jump completely east and we start looking at things that we could do like with Indian food or something like that with our wild game.
I can't master that. That's been the hardest one for me. We love Indian food. Like that's the one consistent with takeout. I can't get the flavors right. So yeah, if there's somebody, if I can do a shout out for your other listeners.
Yeah.
If
more somebody, shouts.
Please God, if you have like, something that you have been able to do with Indian food, like by all means, please. No, I did I don't know if you've ever heard like butter chicken. It's an Indian food. And I did a butter buck But I could not get the sauce right. So I went and bought the store butter chicken in a jar. And it was good. It was so good.
Nice.
Right. So I had to do the store-bought sauce. Like we still did it with the rice. We had a side of vegetables. And that's okay.
Like, yeah.
You know,
well, at the same time, are you making your own puff pastry at that point? Do you have a whole half a day to fold in that butter? No, get the stuff off the shelf. If you're not sure on the butter sauce, just go get the buttered chicken sauce.
Right. Yeah. The wontons I made, the pot stickers. No, man, I'm making, and I know the dough's easy and whatever. I did store-bought wonton wrappers.
Life's too short. You know, yeah, exactly. As someone who's like, I'm trying to dive as deep into culinary adventure as I can. You know, I mean, we're at the point now where we're trying to be only making our own tortillas, but at the same time, we're both working adults, and it's, you know, I can go get a 10 pack of the little taco tortillas on the way home. Like, that might just have to be the way it is, but you know, there, you got your cut your ends off at some point.
Yeah. Now I know, like, tonight I did a, because I had some of the goose left over, right, from the pot stickers, and Passover is this Saturday. And I don't know when your pot, you know, when this would air, but
we'll probably be just on the post side. Oh no.
Okay. Yeah.
I was gonna say it'll be next week, next Monday.
Yeah. So Passover starts on it'd be the Saturday morning, so it'd be March 27th, the Jewish Passover. But one of the things they have is the matzah ball soup, right? A Persian version, a Persian Jewish. So like, it's Gandhi, they call it, G-O-N-D-I, which translates to balls. So tonight I did a goose Gandhi. So it's like a matzah ball soup, but we use ground goose, and chickpea flour. You can use matzo flour, but you can also substitute chickpea flour. And it's just, it's like a chicken broth. But yeah, my wife and daughter loved it. Yeah. I mean, it was just warm, soothing soup. If you've ever had matzo ball soup, but that, you know, that was something we could do. And then we could talk about Passover to our daughter, right? We're not Jewish, but I mean, we can talk about that, that part of it. So
exactly.
Kind of tying those things together.
What a cool way to make that part of, I mean, at that point, our Christian narrative to tie in, like, where the roots of where our faith comes from at that point, and to be able to, like, make something that's like, well, our Jewish brothers and sisters on that side, they honor Passover at that point, and then this would be something they traditionally eat. That's super cool.
Yeah, and so now we're going to do it, like, from a Catholic, you know, tradition. So I want to serve. Then I saved half of the meatball, so we can serve it again on the Thursday night before Easter, right? So which would be like the Last Supper. So that they would have been celebrating Passover. So that's, we're going to save it for that and do it that, and then we can talk about it, you know, more in depth. I just had to get the recipe down first.
How many times do you make something before you really put it down into writing? Or is it something that you're writing along as you're doing it? Because I know I fall into the trap too, where I'm like, I just get into the creative mode. I'm add a little of this, add a little of that, do this, do that. And then by the time you make it, like, oh, that was so good, you should make that again. Damn. I didn't write it down. Are you doing this a couple times, or is it just like you're writing it as you're doing it?
Yeah, I'm kind of writing it so like I'll prep it, like I'll see something, right? I'll hear something on a, like, I listen to hunting podcasts like yours and cooking podcasts, right? Like I'll just be listening to like Milk Street Radio, and somebody will mention something, and I'm like, oh, I could totally do something wild game with that, right? You know, or just paging through a cookbook, and just be, you know, it, just getting inspiration there. But, and I would say probably like the, my biggest surprise was the Wellington coming out on the first try. That was crazy. My only thing would be, and I wish I wouldn't have put it in the recipe, like using the deli ham instead of prosciutto. Oh. Deli ham is wet. Deli ham is wet.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I'd put that in there, like to dry it, like on paper towels, like to get it, make sure you get it dry. So if somebody's just pulling this liquidy sandwich meat out, right? That puff pastry is not going to be like on the bottom, especially.
Well, if you don't get your, it could be that. It also could be the, if you don't sweat the, or if you don't get your duxelle, you get your mushrooms dry enough, right? Either. My first Wellington, oh yeah, I cut it open and I opened it for like presentation and there was like a gush first. Like, I mean, it, maybe people still oohed and aahed over it, but at the same time, it was like there was just this liquid leaching. It was almost like the dam broke. Like, oh no.
Now, did you put olive oil or butter in your pan?
No, I didn't.
Or did you use a dry pan?
I used dry
pan. Okay. All right. Yeah. And I think you just, you think you're like, how long should these mushrooms cook? Right.
Oh, it took forever. And I was like, and I think maybe because I was right. Like, all right, that was good enough. And I just, you know, went after it. And I don't think I got to that point, but man, those mushrooms hold a ton of moisture.
Yeah.
And it probably also was, the meat as well. But yeah, it just, I remember opening it up and everybody was like, ooh, but it was just this puddle. So I immediately like, I make a few slices, pick up the whole thing and then like move it to a new platter, dump the other one in the sink. Like, all right, get that out of here. Salvage what I can. The show must go on.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. When I took the photo of this, you know, I'll be honest. When I took that photo of the Jackalope Wellington that's up on the website, man, I was dabbing with a paper towel on the bottom, right?
Yeah.
On the plate. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like it's, you know, there's, you know, you got to have this, you try to have a nice presentation, but yeah, you're going to get liquid. It's going to happen. We're not, you know, but you don't have to be like a, you know, Gordon Ramsay's Hell's Kitchen and like smash it, right? That guy has thrown more. It's one of my favorite shows, but used to be, but I, you know, he's like, he's thrown more Wellingtons and smashed them because it wasn't so perfect. And you know, we're not going to get it perfect. There's no perfect recipe,
right?
There's not. It's what do you enjoy, what's your family going to like. And sometimes stuff does not, you know, like that Wellington you said, you know, it was wet. Mm-hmm. People oohed and aahed, and I bet you it tasted great. Did you guys like it?
Oh, we loved it. And I made a hollandaise to go along with it. That was also the other stressor that I really wanted that to work out. And oh man,
I hear you, man.
Just being able to, I put a slab or a slice on everybody's plate. I don't want to say slab because they weren't that thick, but anyway, slice. And then be able to drizzle that on top and then just like hand those out around the table. And when you dug into that, like you didn't think the moisture almost came from the hollandaise at that point. You didn't think about all the leaching stuff that was out there. And it did. It was just so much. It was rich on rich on rich. It was, it was a holiday meal, but oh man, it just, everybody was super stoked with it. So it was a success.
Does your wife like to, did those guys, did your guests, like, do they like hollandaise sauce?
They do. My one buddy.
My wife won't do it. So
she doesn't do the hollandaise? Oh, man.
No. So, and I'm like, oh, you know, are you going to do hollandaise sauce just for me? Because my wife and daughter won't do it. So, I miss hollandaise sauce, man. Now you got me jonesing for hollandaise. Now I'm going to come up with something.
Well, I'm not even a big, like, Eggs Benedict person. Like, whatever. But, like, oh, man, I could, if there was a hollandaise soup, I mean, that is probably the worst thing for you between yolk and butter, that being the main ingredients. I mean,
but yeah, I remember doing a catering gig and somebody had bid in a silent auction. And so I like went into their home and made this dinner for 8 people. And I had to redo it because my eggs we're cooking. Yeah. So it's just like, oh no. So I'm like trying to do this hollandaise sauce.
Because that's the whole trick is not to let it break. There's that breaking
right?
aspect.
Yeah. So I had to start all over, and thank God I had this, you know, enough ingredients for, to do a second batch, right. To serve 8 people. Like yeah. I was smart enough to plan that out. Like if things go wrong, you better be prepared. So, it turned out on the second try, but man, yeah, no, I love it. So good for you. Yeah.
I tell you, you know, just being able to jump out and do something new. Granted, maybe you shouldn't do something new when you've had guests there. You know, maybe try it out on yourself on a small family setting. But it did. I wanted to feel the rush, and that's what I did.
Yeah, I've never been that smart to try it before I have guests.
Maybe it's like that performing thing, you know, with your catering that you were doing. You're like, I need some sort of anxiety. I need that edge. I need to feel nervous to be able to do my best.
Yeah, and I think I maybe, you know, I love the energy of working restaurants, you know, doing some local cooking competitions. You know, I just thrived on that, right? Did a Chopped competition, and won that, and then did another cooking competition and beat out the other guy who, which was kind of a big upset, but just that rush, right? But now, I think one of my absolute favorite thing to do, and I was just sharing this with my wife, if we're cooking, if I'm cooking Italian, I'll you know, ask Alexa to play, you know, Pavarotti, and you know, just go to town. All the girls are playing, or Cajun. Throw some Cajun music on. You know, just having fun while with that cooking, and just having that energy to it. It just brings a little bit more excitement for me. And then, you know, and then usually the girls are dancing around in the kitchen in the dining room to the music, or singing while I'm cooking. So that makes a little bit more fun.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
My one boy,
I don't like the hours. I don't miss the hours of the restaurants.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I can't even imagine
weekends. Yeah. Yeah.
I got one boy who would like that whole idea. Just play the whatever genre music that we're trying to cook and to just dance. He's, yeah, man. Like right now, his favorite movie is, oh, what's the one about the circus? The Barnum and Bailey video that came out. I'm drawing a blank.
I don't
on the
know
name
this
of
one.
It. Shoot, Hugh Jackman's in it. I am drawing a complete.
I know. Do you want me to look this up?
I was going to say, we got the internet at our fingertips. But it's a huge musical piece to it. And
The Greatest Showman?
The Greatest Showman. Oh, my goodness. Thank
okay.
you. Thank you.
Yeah, I haven't seen this. Okay.
Oh, go watch it. It's good. But that, I mean, that just sums up, like, he'll be blasting that soundtrack and just be dancing away to it. My other two boys, they are, I mean, they're as savage as can be. They have no time for dancing. They're either chasing after the dog or they're trying to trap a critter outside. And it's so like to have this idea, like the whole idea of like, let's make this evening where we just like play music. Like someone's going to end up with a knife and it's going to be more of a standoff in the kitchen. Like a couple people just need to leave. We need to wait till the food's done, then we'll come together. But like that's our thing too, is like when we do come together and be like, Dad, is this a deer that we helped cut up? Is this the deer that you did this? And so they do love to talk about like the different parts of that whole hunt experience and then to bring that back in. But yeah, they could use a little culture in their life, but they are 4-2 at this point. So, you know,
my daughter's job is to, yeah, she writes the, I think just getting your kids involved too in that process. Like I got a big grinder this year, and, you know, so she'll sit there with the, you know, she'll put the meat down the, you know, we've had the safety talk and I'm right there, you know. But she loves putting the meat through the grinder. We're very much starting like very elementary knife skills, right? But when her job is to label the vacuum seal bags when we process. And so I know, you know, she'll write it out what it is. And then she'll draw a picture, like, right. So if it's dad's antelope, then she'll draw an antelope or a deer or a rabbit, you know, or a fish, whatever it is.
She doesn't try to throw you off with like unicorn front quarter or something like that.
No, that's my other buddies. If I had buddies that come over, like, yeah, they'll mislabel things. Yeah. So that's good. It's fun. I don't know how I could do, if I had three small children in my kitchen, like you, I don't think these things would be posted on social media. I don't think it would go well.
It's been a while since I've had one just cause yeah, it's either I'm clearing everybody out or like, yeah, it's just one of those things like, shove it down their face. Let's go. We got to move along. Bedtime's coming.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's another thing too. When I try to do a recipe, you know, and then try to get a picture and the girls are like, hello, can we eat? Right. So I don't have a lot of, you know, I can't be sitting there spending even 10 minutes trying to get a photo. So I kind of have to have all that played out in my head. Like, which plate am I going to use? What's going to look better? You know, my wife actually was sick of me plugging in the lights, like the photography lights in our kitchen. So for my birthday this last January, they set me up a little spot in the basement. Like I have my own little setup and they bought me a bunch of different plates, like colored plates and things like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was it was just a perfect gift.
That is.
But so I got to make the plate, run down the stairs to the basement, get the shot, right, and then run back up and eat with them, you know.
Do they start and then you do grace because you're doing down there taking so many shots, or do they wait to do grace and then eat?
No, I'll get one plated and get the shot, get the photo, and then I'll run up and we'll pray and eat as a family.
Yeah. Awesome. We always sit and eat.
Yeah, yeah. But I, you know, I can't take too long. Right?
Right.
And my wife wants hot food. You know, my daughter doesn't care. She doesn't want hot food. So that doesn't matter to her. But yeah, my wife would appreciate a warm meal. So yeah, so timing is on that. It adds a little bit more. Maybe there's that excitement, right?
Exactly.
In the meal prep. Yeah. It's trying to get that shot and make it back up before the rest of the dinner is cold, the other servings. So.
Well, hey Jeff, this brings us to our two dish breakdown. This is the crescendo here, towards the end of our show here, where I'm basically just going to give you a scenario and then you've got to give me the dish that you would prepare for this. And I got two pretty timely ones. So yes, okay. By the time this is dropping, it will be, we'll be in that last week before Easter. It'll be right around, just after, Passover, just after Palm Sunday here, before Passover. But anyway, for an Easter dish that would include wild game, and I'm going to keep it wide, but you got to tell me the animal, the cut, that you're going to use. What and how are you going to serve for an Easter meal with your family?
Man, I think you could go, it's for us. I keep, some of the, like the hams, like the animal ham on the leg. Now, when I mean ham, it's not like a brined already, but, like that whole,
the whole hind leg quarter there at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I do paper wrapped and hang on to those. So like if I come up with something later, so I still have quite a few of them in there, and I'm just pulling out the one tonight. And I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it yet. So I would say either I'm going to brine it and do a ham, which will take a week. So I got to get on the ball and then put it in the smoker, which I've done one, an antelope ham. But we're not big ham eaters. So I am probably going to take a recipe that I find for like a roasted leg of lamb with like a, I don't know, like something like a lemon herb salt kind of a thing, and do like a leg of venison with that.
There you go.
And just substitute it. And I'm probably going to follow like a tried and true, very high rated recipe that somebody's done.
I mean, Easter, that's pretty intense. You want to have something good for that holiday.
Yeah, but I'm probably going to be in the smoker though.
Gotcha.
Because that's my wife's favorite, mesquite chips. I've tried everything else under the sun, and that's my wife's favorite.
So, she likes the mesquite. Wow.
She does. Yeah. Yeah.
That's usually a pungent
one.
I've got
apple. I've got, I've got everything. That's what she wants. So, she's a changed woman now.
Well, good deal. So you're going a hindquarter, leg of venison,
whole roasted leg. Yeah. Yeah. Now you're going to have to, when you're carving it, just be forewarned, right? You're going to have some silver skin stuff you don't want to eat in between the muscle groups. So you're not just slicing away. I mean, it's, you know, going crazy.
Right.
So you're just going to have to, you know, you're not just throwing the leg up on the table and people are going to slice through. It's not going to be, it's, I don't think it's going to work out too well.
Right. So there's going to have to be some, yeah, there's going to have to be some creativity when it comes to carving, even just to get around the femur and stuff like that, if you're going bone in.
Yeah. So I think you're going to, it's not something you want to set on the table and then just have people start picking at. So I think you're going to have to do some carving and like, just be really, if you have listeners doing that and they want to try it, it's great. I've done it, but just be very, especially if you're introducing this for somebody's first wild game experience. You got to get that silver skin off. You don't want that, them, especially at the dinner table with guests, them either like, hopefully they have a napkin to spit it into.
I was going to say, have both a napkin under the silverware and then one on the table. just for something to hide in.
That's not a good first experience. Yeah, that's not a good first experience. Is somebody getting some like stringy, whether it's waterfowl or wild game or, you know, big game, you know, getting that silver skin, you know.
We're dealing with athletes, you know. Every animal out there is just fending for its life. And we just, we are graced to be able to get this thing. And so now we're having to deal with, you know, this is such natural, amazing protein. But at the same time, like, man, these suckers are tough. Well, yeah, it's had to survive this whole time. So that silver skin's going to be a lot tougher than, you know, one sitting in pasture.
Right. And I'm going to brine it first too. I'd probably brine it and inject it, you know.
There you go.
And, and then put it on the smoker. Definitely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey,
are you trying anything new or?
I think we're going someplace for Easter. Okay. Now, the family in question, my in-laws that we go with, gyozas are always a great thing that they like to do. In fact, my wife's grandfather was stationed, was he Army? He was one of the branches. Anyway, he was a diesel mechanic, and he was actually stationed in Japan for, I believe it was the Vietnam War. But anyway, his big thing was to fix up machinery, tanks and jeeps and stuff and bring those either have their final leg going through there or bringing back pieces that he's got to then retrofit and fix together.
Sure.
But anyway, he befriended a family over there, and so he learned how to make gyozas and then brought that back. So it's like we've got this like family, a family recipe that was in Japan is now here in Michigan, and so like that's that continuing thing, and so we've been able to adapt that into venison. So that's our new Christmas thing, is we do that. So I don't know if I'll do gyozas just because it's a family recipe, and we usually save that for Christmas. I did a whole haunch already, or a whole leg of venison, a whole leg of whitetail, for a holiday get together that we had with friends. I don't know what I'm going to do for Easter. This is really good. I might have to scroll this this guy's Instagram. You might know him. He's over there in Dakotas. He might have a good idea for me. Maybe something along the lines of fish. We haven't done a whole lot with fish, and my boys do love bluegills. Maybe like a fish patty or something. Going to the fryer is always really, really nice, but to do something like a fish cake, I think that would be kind of cool. Now, we didn't go full Lent this year and go fish all during the week and then saved our red meat. We're back and forth all over the place, but so we haven't been sick of fish yet. But to do like a fish cake, I think it would be super fun.
Yeah, and like even like a mango salsa or something along those lines. I mean, you can make it like really look pretty on the plate, and
it is spring, right? We can get floral. We can get real funky with that now. Yes.
Yeah. Now I'm probably gonna go upstairs and say, oh yeah, he asked, and mention this to my wife, and she's like, can we just grill some steaks? Because
you don't get it.
Like that's the first day. It's gonna hit 70 degrees. We're gonna be outside. Yeah. So I mean, my whole plan could get thrown up in the air,
Gotcha.
But if I could just be out grilling, yeah, that's okay too.
There you go.
Makes my life a lot easier. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what's my second? You said there was two.
Yes. The second one here, the readers, the haters from your Overcooked Meat have gotten a hold of me, and you're done. You're actually, we've decided to cancel you altogether. And you've got your last meal rights. So we've decided to throw you into the electric chair. You're on death row, and your day is coming up tomorrow.
I used beets with avocados, and I served it on a well-done antelope backstrap. Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yep, right. They're done with you. Anyway, yep. They have granted you your last meal, and what I want to know is what is going to be Jeff's last meal on Earth. And mind you, you should probably be very detailed because you're buying some time here. So what's going to be your last meal that you would have on Earth, Jeff?
It's not wild game.
Not wild game?
It's not. No, it's not. There is a... So my mom's family is... is from Tampa, and there's this rich history that we have. When I get off the plane, I go immediately. There's a Cuban place that I stop before, but we still have a house down there. My parents do. Before I get to the house, I stop at this place, this restaurant, and I get Spanish bean soup. So it's got ham. Which you could do. I've done a wild game version of this, it actually turned out pretty good. But it's ham, chorizo sausage, garbanzo beans, it's potatoes. It just reminds me of family. It reminds me of my grandparents who are gone now. It reminds me of Florida. And it's just my absolute favorite recipe in the world, right? Like my mom will forget the ingredients sometimes, and she'll call me, and that's the one I have memorized. I do not need a cookbook. It's home. And I've done it with antelope ham that I brined and I smoked and I did, and some venison chorizo. And it was pretty good. So it could be a wild game version, right?
Gotcha.
But yeah, and I'm going to have to insist with dessert, and that's going to be key lime pie, because that's another family recipe, super simple. But my grandfather used to have this. It was my grandmother's recipe. And when she was in the hospital for before she passed away, she was in the hospital and then in a care unit for a very long time, months and months. He kept, and for years and even after this, but he kept a copy of her recipe, this key lime pie recipe, in his front pocket. And if he really liked the nurse, if it was somebody who was really kind to his wife, he would motion to them with his finger, like, "Hey, come here." And he would pull out this recipe and offer it to them. And we still have some of the handwritten, I still have a copy of his handwritten recipe. And that is just such a special thing that he would share that, right? Yeah. This is the recipe that just spoke of our family tradition, and that he would share this recipe. But man, you had to be pretty somebody special. He wasn't handing this out to anybody.
That's so cool.
I think just him sharing that recipe, I think that I was always very proud to be his grandson. And so I think, me sharing recipes like I do now, I just kind of like to follow in his footsteps in that regard. So, yeah.
That's an incredible story. Yeah. I love that. And what a wrap up to go from talking about, recipes and like how should we write them? And do we want to make sure that there's something you follow by the letter, or is it something to be played with, and to like go on these different tangents, but to be able just to sum this up with like, you know what, ultimately when it comes down to it, we're sharing what we love, and that, this list of instructions is making something that we're going to eat, but at the same time, it has so much relevance to where it came from, who wrote this, and who it's supposed to be served for. That's an awesome tie up there, Jeff. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I don't think I'll have a Jackal of Wellington shoved in my front pocket in years to come. Maybe I might choose something else.
There you go.
Yeah, something a little simpler. But yeah.
Well, awesome. Jeff, can you share with our listeners where can we find where can we find more about you? What was your Instagram handle? Is there any other place that you've got these posted that we can find out about your recipes?
Yeah, so I'm on very new to Instagram as of like December. But I think I have over 50, and maybe about 50 different posts and recipes on there that are actual recipes. But I would say, so that's on Instagram, it's ND Wild Game Cook. So like for North Dakota, ND Wild Game Cook. Or you could actually, I'm a field staff writer for Harvesting Nature. So you can go to harvestingnature.com and you can find some of the recipes they published some of my recipes. Or if anybody's really interested in that Jackalope Wellington, they can go to backcountryhunters.org. That recipe's there. That's going to be up. So
good deal. Yeah, I'll definitely put that in the show notes too, so people can just click that link and find that one.
Yeah, but yeah, again, if anybody has any, I'm always looking for more interesting ideas. You know, somebody just took my goose pot sticker idea and she just sent me a message and she used some of her elk, and served it for her family. Like she just earlier today, and sent me a picture. So that was pretty cool. That's just always good to see, like, you know, inspiring somebody to pull the meat out of their freezer. So that was just kind of uplifted me today. So, but yeah, if anybody has any ideas, or wants to share their stuff, right? Maybe you want me to try it out and, you know, get out the bad stuff before you try it on your family. Yeah, by all means, I'll do that for you.
Or editor. That's a new title for you.
Yeah, I'll do the bad. Yeah, I'll work out the kinks. And then I can send it back to you. Or if somebody's got an interesting recipe that they love to do with wild game, I'd love to hear from you guys too.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Jeff, go ahead and hold on. I'm gonna send our listeners on out. Folks, if you stuck around this long and just enjoyed talk about recipes, well, hey, you're in good company. I hope you enjoyed the time where we've just been able to talk about, like, you know, we've got this protein that you know, doesn't come to us in a perfect way. We have to go harvest it and it's lived a wild life, and now we're going to try and create something that we want to be able to be pleasing and nourishing to our families. And sometimes just status quo, throwing it in a pot of cream mushroom soup, just doesn't cut it. And so having the ability to get creative is one of those big drivers behind us as sportsmen, that we want to make this exciting and be able to write those down into recipes. So folks, as you continue to write your recipes, make sure you got a notebook next to you and you're writing stuff down. And once you've made it, maybe be willing to play with it a little bit. See it more as art as opposed to chemistry or science. But whatever you're doing, always make sure that those knives are sharp.